Welcome to Shift with CJ. I'm your host CJ, and together we will explore the areas of health, human performance, biohacking, psychology, and much more that will inspire you to become the best version of yourself.
So, do you find yourself being more sensitive when compared to your friends or family? Does your environment sometimes stress you out? Do you feel that there's some kind of a noise in your life? Well, if you do, then I'm here to tell you that you have a sensitive soul. And today, I've brought on someone highly sensitive herself, who's here to show you that being sensitive is your superpower. Today on the show, I have a medical doctor, best-selling author, speaker. She leads workshops and is an energy healer and the founder of the Academy of Light Medicine. She also has a degree in biochemistry, which is an area of my interest. And she's been an assistant professor in UCLA. Dr. Karen Khan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, CJ. I'm so honored to be here.
I'm so honored to have you on my show today, Doctor. So when I look at your profile, you've got an impressive background in terms of education. But talk to me about your journey post-education. Have you faced any medical issues or any problems as a medical doctor, or you never get
sick? Definitely. Well, you know, since I was always a highly sensitive person, but didn't really honor that growing up because I wanted to be like everyone else. I wanted to be normal. I wanted to be tough. I wanted to be like, woo, superhero. Mm-hmm. You know, I've loved superhero movies since I was really, really young. So I kept trying to be who I was not. And throughout my journey, you know, going to school, I was a high achiever. So trying to get top of the class, A pluses, you know, scholarships, the whole bit. And after medical school, I didn't really realize how burnt out my body was because, as you can imagine, in medical school, we, you know, go days on end without sleep, you know, being on call and seeing very, very stressful situations, seeing people die and being terribly sick. So I didn't realize that as a sensitive person that I was kind of absorbing all of that, really feeling, you know, all of that stress and that pain of other people's stuff, and didn't really know that I was still holding it on to my, you know, in my body. So my physical body finally kind of burnt out and I had developed chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, autoimmune diseases, multiple chemical sensitivities, EMF sensitivities, and basically was depressed and miserable. In fact, I was so bad, I felt like I wanted to kill myself. And I couldn't imagine, like, you know, I thought that, you know, patients that had this kind of thing just didn't try hard enough. But then I realized when I got it that I was trying as hard as I could and I was not healthy and not better. And one night I just, you know, I was sobbing myself to sleep so many nights previous to that. And I just heard a quiet voice. It was my own voice, but it was like a quiet voice that said, "You have a choice." Just very nonchalant, very neutral, no emotion. And, you know, I was kind of arguing with myself and said, "No, I don't have a choice. I have to do this and that and that." And then it kept repeating, "No, you have a choice." And so I thought, well, I did have a choice. What would I do? And at that point in time, I really needed to divorce my then husband. Not because he was a bad person or anything like that, but it's just that it was really stressing me out not to be who I was and just trying to please everyone. I really need to be alone. And so that was the really start, amazing start of a incredible journey, CJ, of my life. We call that in the spiritual circles, the dark night of the soul, where everything falls apart. Everything's chaotic. You know, I was in debt. I was sick. I was in partial disability. But that was the beginning of a beautiful healing.
What steps did you take to heal yourself? Did you enroll in a course? Did you sit by yourself in silence and try to meditate on it? Like, how did you progress from having that voice into what you are today?
That is a great question. Well, I can definitely tell you I was not good at meditation and still am not. I have my own ways of connecting. So meditation was not something that I was very good at. I was very much a doer. And I think that, you know, what got to that point was that I had been always, as a sensitive soul, this is very natural, always interested in reading like self-help books, spiritual books, you know, that kind of thing. And so it seemed to me that once I made that commitment, I didn't realize it was commitment at the time, but the commitment to, okay, if I did have a choice, what would I do? you know, and just even entertain that in my mind, because I was very black and white back then. You know, I was like, divorce is wrong, it's bad, it's evil, never do that, you know, like. And so when I entertained the thought that maybe, possibly, I could make a choice that maybe would make me happy and not everybody else, then it seemed like I was attracting different teachers, different courses. And yeah, so I ended up finding a Reiki master in town and started taking classes with her and started getting energy healing from her. And she has wonderful insight. And she's, you know, I talk about her, Pat. Her name is Pat. Talk about her in my book, Sensitivity is Your Superpower, about how she helped me transform this this illness. And then I also went to the Omega Institute and found a beautiful teacher, Yana Van Zandt is her name. Cried, I think, the whole weekend. It was that powerful. And I really came home understanding. And that workshop was called Giving from a Full Cup. And I really understood that I was depleting myself and sacrificing myself for what I thought was for the better good of others. But that I understood that there is no way that I can help others the best I can if I'm in this state of black and loss and, you know, not being healthy. I was just pretending. So it really rocked me to my core. And from that point on, I started rebuilding my life and being more truthful and authentic and saying no, which is really hard.
Or something. And you've done so well for yourself. I really respect you for that.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a hard journey, but I wouldn't trade it for anything, because I think spirit really needed to kind of knock me on my butt to convince me to really follow my divine path, because I was very religious growing up. So I thought, you know, doing my divine path was basically following all the rules, you know, that church and society and parents said I should do. But I wasn't happy. I was miserable, but I didn't really admit that I was miserable. So that was the problem. So I needed the illness at the time to
realize.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The universe conspired, if you will. I call it the angelic 2x4. So here in America, you know, 2x4 beams, you know, the construction workers use it. If you get the side of the head with it, you'll get knocked out. But usually how our angelic, you know, helpers, God, source, however people talk about it, they kind of knock on the door gently to give you a hint. Hey, you're going the wrong way. This isn't what's aligned for you. This isn't you, you know. And then if we don't answer that knock, then they knock louder. Hey, no, wrong way, right? Mm-hmm. And they knock louder. Well, I wasn't listening to anything. I was just going way too fast, really down this rabbit hole of this is the way life should be, but I was unhappy. And then finally, it was like the angel said, hey, let's get the 2x4 because Dr. Karen's not really listening.
It's our time, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good thing is you didn't get knocked off too hard.
Yeah.
And according to one of these researches that you've cited in your book, it says that more than 30% of us are sensitive. Now, 30% is a big number. Uh-huh. Do you see any commonalities between these groups of sensitive people? You spoke about religion. So things like race, religion, background. Does this influence how sensitive people are, or is it the culture or the beliefs? Like if you were raised in a culture that believes in the supernatural or various entities or let's say energies, does that make you more sensitive to them?
Great question. You know, I have done healings, thousands and thousands of healings for clients, people, students all over the world. And the one thing is clear for me is that being a highly sensitive person or sensitive soul, it doesn't really matter where you come from, you know, what culture, how you grew up, or your parents, or anything like that. Like, it seems to be spread all over the world. Now, that being said, it doesn't necessarily mean that the culture is open to the concept or that it even exists. So there's a difference. Like, you know, that 30%, I mean, you know, it's just the latest study. However, I believe that there are highly sensitive people in certain cultures where they don't really get it, or they don't really think that's a thing. Whereas, for example, in North America, things are being a little bit more open, which is why the researchers, you know, are from here. But They're more open, so they're asking these sorts of questions. But there is a characteristic of the highly sensitive souls that I work with that is very clear. When these children grow up, or as they grow up, they tend to be ones that they feel different from the other kids. Like they either cry very easily, they feel sad for other people easily. Some people feel they're rebellious because they question authority and they question, like, why do I have to do that? That doesn't make sense, right? Like they'll see, for example, I'll just give you an American example. So they'll see, for example, their parents watching the presidential debates, you know, on TV, right? And
yep.
And in America, you know, being the president is like this big, huge honor, you know, and some families really aspire to have, well, my son could be a president or my daughter could be president, you know, that kind of thing. So then, you know, the children may see the parents watching the debate and they're seeing these two adults fighting each other on TV, okay, and saying unkind things. And then, you know, the sensitive soul will be like, that doesn't make sense. Why would I want to be like that? Like, why should you even tell me what to do? You know, like they'll understand on some deep level that this doesn't make sense. Like, and so they'll buck the system and they won't like it. But not all sensitive souls are that rebellious. Some of them really are the really soft ones that really try to fit in. They're quiet, they're loving, they're empathetic. You know, they you know what people need before they even the other people know what they need. Unfortunately, as they grow up, if they're not honored for their sensitivity, they're usually told to buck up, stop being so sensitive, grow a thicker skin. And if they try to be who they're not, which is what I did, they end up sick, physically sick. They can have autoimmunity, more than the average person, at least in my experience, multiple chemical sensitivities, fibromyalgia is a typical diagnosis for highly sensitive souls who are burnt out, chronic fatigue syndrome, chronic pain. So life can be really, really difficult for these folks because they were never told that they have a gift, if you will, of being sensitive and told how to control it.
When we speak about sensitive souls, one of the most common things which is generally accepted is that sensitive people are emotional. Have you heard that before?
Yeah. I think it's just
more emotional than each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is that not only do they feel their own emotions, they feel other people's emotions. And then it becomes like a deluge of emotional energy. And when they're children, this is really interesting, CJ, what I've noticed is when they're children and they are in an atmosphere of stress, whether it be from their parents or teachers or school or other children, whatever it is, what'll happen is that all that negative energy, they kind of sponge up and they don't have the adult control over their emotions. So what happens is that they freak out and explode. I can't tell you how many children I've, you know, seen come across like that. They have what they call a quote unquote meltdown. So these kids will just melt down. And then all the focus is on what's wrong with the kid. That's what bothers me, right? They're like, what's wrong with this kid? Let's medicate this kid. Let's Yeah. Right. And what it is they're just sensing all the negative energy around them. And that could be, you know, Wi-Fi, you know, that could be pesticides that they're eating. Like it could be so many things. And then they explode because they have so much emotional energy pent up from other people. They have not been taught to clear it. They have not been taught to go to center. But when they do, life is completely 180 degrees different. They do well in school. They thrive. They're happy. It's a shame, unfortunately, that we don't really talk about sensitive children in our regular schools, at least we don't here in America.
I like the fact that you mentioned in your books and just right now that children can be sensitive to other forms of energy and chemicals. These can be just the chemicals from food or Wi-Fi. And one more reason that people become sensitive is because these days we have a culture of eating more processed foods. Mm-hmm. We lack sleep. We're looking for constant gratification, which can imbalance neurotransmitters such as dopamine, and it rewires the pleasure pathways in the brain. And as you said, EMF or electromagnetic waves coming out of the phones can also make our cells weak. Now, for someone who's listening and you're like, what is CJ and Dr. Karen talking about? And if you're next to your phone or your laptop, just know that all the time, these electronic devices can make you weak on a cellular level by opening up things like voltage-gated calcium channels, which allow for more calcium ions to jump into the cell and then just, I'm trying to remember the right word for it, but excitotoxicity is a phenomenon where all these calcium ions are going into the cell and then the cell finally dies. And then people start becoming weak. We've been seeing prevalences of this throughout the world.
Absolutely.
And it's more in children, right? Children are highly sensitive to these.
Yeah, children in general are highly sensitive. And there's a saying that we have, it's not a very nice saying, but it's like, you know, they're canaries in the coal mine, meaning that, you know, in a coal mine, if there's a problem with oxygen or toxic gases from the coal mine, the canary will die. And if the canary dies, then the miners know they got to get up, you know, get out of there, right? Because it's dangerous. So our children are kind of like that. Now, does it, you know, almost all children are sensitive to some degree, you know, to these sorts of things. But after a while, sometimes their body will just tolerate seemingly tolerate the toxins, but it'll show up in other areas. So the highly sensitive people who seem emotional, who have these breakdowns, who have, you know, allergies, multiple, you know, illnesses, actually, to be honest, they're the ones that are actually manifesting, expressing what is really going on in their environment. Whereas some people that quote unquote aren't as highly sensitive may not have symptoms, but yet their bodies are still being negatively affected, like you said, you know, with electromagnetic radiation, like cell phone radiation, Wi-Fi radiation. And it's not, you know, they're not complaining of symptoms, but they could have like cancer down the line, you know, like they don't know because why do some bodies have symptoms and others don't? Well, you know, some people are very gifted in feeling things through their body. I'm one of them. It's called clairsentience. And there are others that are not, they don't feel their body. You know, they're not aware, body aware. So if they're not body aware, they're not even realizing that they're being toxified, if you will, or being damaged. So I think it's really important for us to respect that, yeah, there are things in our environment, like you said, you know, EMF, pesticides, herbicides, genetically modified foods, so let's go on, that are really harmful for the average human person. And our highly sensitive people having symptoms is really pointing out to us, hey, this is not okay. Let's do something different.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. And I think a lot of people should be listening to all these signals that come in and then take action as soon as possible to see some changes. Now, you mentioned that some people like yourself can feel things much better than the others. In your book, you also mentioned that there are people who can hear things like clairaudience, and some people who just know things such as clairknowing. And you have one more, which is clairvoyance, which are able to understand people better. Is there anything else that you've come in your practice which was out of the ordinary, like a different kind of superpower?
Oh, yeah. So we're talking about, I like to call them the clairs. different people will have a different dominant clair, at least in my, you know, just personal observation is, and sometimes our language will tell us, the language that we use will tell us which ones are dominant clair. Like people that say things like, oh, I see your point. So they may be more clairvoyant. So their eyes and vision. Or, you know, if you're very highly clairsentient, you might say, oh, I feel you, you know. And that isn't written in stone, but I often think that our language gives us away where we are. But there are these talents that are called clairs. I call them sensing talents. So sensing through the body, through vision, through hearing. People, you know, being able to hear angelic voices or demonic voices or, you know, something else. They can hear that through their, you know, physical ears. And sometimes they hear it through internal, talk. Just like that one time where I heard, you know, you have a choice, right? That was more clairaudient, but it was internal to me. I didn't feel it external to me. But some people can hear things external to them that other people can't hear. Sort of like dogs. They can hear a dog whistle, right? But humans can't. Same sort of thing.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. And then there's clairessence, which is being able to smell. So, and we all have, and the thing is, we all have these talents, but we just all have them developed to a different degree and a different balance of each of them. So the clairessence person, you know, who's very clairessence may be able to sense things through smell. So they might walk into a house, and I'm sure you know what this means, but they'll walk into the house and immediately know there's a mold, a toxic mold in that house, and they'll walk straight out.
Yep, you know? They're super sensitive to things like these.
Yeah, and other people are like, I don't smell it, you know? I've been to potluck parties where, you know, I'll eat like a nut, you know, energy ball or whatever, and dessert that somebody made, and the first, you know, chew where that nut hits my taste buds, this is clairgustance now, or clairgustians, I can tell that it's rancid, and I put it down.
Delicious.
But everyone else is eating it, and I'm like, really, guys? You know, I say to my husband, can't you?
Yeah, you are. You know?
My mom's really good with those clairs. Like, she'll say to my dad, she's just like, oh, milk is bad, don't drink it. And dad's like, oh, I already drank it. And she goes, that's bad. Yeah. And clairknowing, of course, is just knowing. And everyone wants that clair, right? Just to know the truth, just to know in your heart of hearts with no fanfare, no emotion, just know what the true answer is or what's really going on. I mean, that is, you know, that is the ultimate. Everyone wants that. But in addition to those sensing gifts, we actually have more like healing or intuiting gifts as well. Well, intuiting and sensing, very similar, but manifesting gifts. So we could actually use our talents to actually create, you know, a different future. So in the book, as you probably already read, we teach people how to influence the weather in a positive way. It's not going to do something that's harmful. You can't like try to hurt someone with a hurricane. You know what I mean? So yeah. With weather magic, it only whatever happens is happens for the highest and greatest good. So if a hurricane does need to hit a particular area, it will. But there, sometimes we can shift the severity of a storm or completely shift course of the storm. We've done that multiple times as a group.
I was so fascinated with that after
reading. Yeah. Well, and you know, some of the storms that we have are amplified or created by a man-made or non, you know, military or, you know, secret military means. So it's interesting how Source God kind of allows us an intervention if it isn't Mother Nature naturally causing something, then we can actually intervene. There was supposed to be a really, really bad hurricane here in our area, which is not even a hurricane area. But the first one hit, I was in Toronto. I had no idea because I didn't watch the news that it hit. I came when we drove home. Our neighbors texted us to say, hey, watch out for the debris on the road. And if you have problems, let us know. We'll guide you around the downed trees and everything. And I said, what the heck happened? She goes, oh, hurricane. I'm like, what? Really? You know, and it really devastated this area. Not, you know, people didn't die, thankfully, but a lot of houses were hit and a lot of businesses went down and things like that. And so when we heard that the next one was coming, it was going to be worse than the first. Okay. And we saw this humongous storm, you know, on the radar. I'm like, not on my watch. So I was like, gotta look to this thing, right? Yeah. So the first time the first hurricane, I have to say, I feel bad about it, but I did move it. It was going to hit my friends in Florida. So I said, well, let's move this somewhere else, right? But I wasn't very specific in what my visualization was. So it ended up hitting me or our community. And I was like, okay, next time it came around, I'm like, I'm going to be much more specific. We're going to make it go outside. Like, no damage, you know, people saved, you know, yeah. And so by the time it did come to us, it was just rain. And people were like so relieved that it wasn't a hurricane. So we've done that multiple times. And so these are some really, and everybody could do this. This is not like special to me as a sensitive soul. All these skills can be taught to someone. And I think just from what we call the ascension process, which is elevating frequencies and vibrations of the planet, the average not quote unquote non-sensitive person is becoming more sensitive, which is why the percentage of sensitive people seems to have jumped from the 70s, 80s, from 20% to now over 30% of people, which is exciting because we really need to be empathetic with each other. Let's stop, you know, hurting each other. Let's stop
hurting each other. Let's help each other. That's the goal. Do you have to step into zero point to do this? Or can you just tell our audience what is the void or zero point? What does this space mean?
Yeah. So as I mentioned before, I've never been a great fan of typical meditation because I couldn't sit still for very long. I was always so busy. Mm-hmm. And I discovered a technique from Dr. Frank Kinslow in his book, Secrets to Instant Healing. I like the word instant, which is why I read it, because I like fast. And he had this technique, and I went into this space of feeling, because I'm very clairsentient. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty easy. And so he encouraged people just to go into that space, which he calls you feeling. Just, you know, for a second at a time, 3 minutes at a time. I'm like, this is awesome. So I started doing that and started seeing very, very positive changes in my life. And then what I, you know, did some more reading and studying. I bought every, you know, book that he had. And one of my students didn't really understand the instructions. So I, because he was also clairsentient, I said, well, look, this is what it feels like in me. I'm just feeling the energy in my body. So let's have you do that now. And he could do that. And he goes, oh, I get it. I can feel it. I feel really peaceful. So what I realized was that, you know, in that space, we could create a different outcome. And it was very powerful. And we talk about stillness. And I was like, well, what is stillness? Well, stillness is what, you know, the quantum physicists have named zero point field, which is a field of infinite possibilities. So in that field, nothing is manifest yet into the physical 3D form, but it's the possibilities of those things. So as we quote unquote still our minds, now the technique I teach in the book is stillness through observing internal movement, stillum. So as we still our minds, we end up connecting to the zero point, which is the creator, if you will. So infinite possibilities. And then from that place, anything that is stressing us out, like negative emotions or even situations, those energies seem to dissipate in the zero point field on its own, as well as us being able to create or affect a positive healing. So do people, you know, consciously have to go to zero point in order to be clairescent or clairsentient? No, a lot of times it's just a natural thing. People can have these skills. However, when we decide that we want to create something that is not already here, then it's very, very helpful to have that ability. And everybody has the ability. It's just a matter of attention and practice to get into that zero point field so we can do healing, so we can create a different new reality. It's wonderful for creation. And if you're just in it, even for a few seconds at a time, I call it the auto healing state. Because I've had several people, once I've taught it to them, they'll come on a healing session with me. We'll do some, you know, testing. And as I go down the testing, I notice that their numbers are improving as we go, as I'm doing the testing. And what's happening is we put each other, you know, we're both in the zero point field as we're doing the testing. And already things are healing, just being in that space before I do any formal Tulpakan healing or anything. And then the nice thing about what I teach, the Tulpakan healing method for my students, we can actually go back in time and test, well, what was it at the beginning of the session? So say someone's kidneys are, by the time I test, it's like 75% happy, and we thought it was a lot lower. So I said, oh, well, what was it, you know, 10 minutes before we started this call? How happy were your kidneys then? And they might have gotten 40%, you know? So in that time span of just in the being state, the kidneys already started to improve. So that's kind of exciting, being in that zero point and really using that. That's a God-given you know, opportunity or gift for all of us and anyone, everyone.
I completely agree. And I've tried to get into that space multiple times in my meditation session. But then there is this also like a famous saying that you don't have to search for anything outside of you. Every answer or every solution that you want is in your consciousness and awareness. And one of the ways to access that divine wisdom is when you sit still and connect to stillness. But what happens is when your life's going upside down, and let's be real here, like with we know what's happened in 2020, when your life's going upside down, everything is just doesn't seem right, then sitting still is very difficult because the emotional or the fear center of the brain called the amygdala is so hyperactive. Do you have any advice for people who would want to get into that stillness, but they're just hyper aroused, or how to calm down that emotional center of the brain?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different techniques that people have used. My favorite story, which I mentioned in the book, is about when I was watching a scary movie. And I was definitely hypervigilant because I couldn't, the first time I watched this movie called The Ring, the original, was very scary. And I couldn't sleep for 3 days. I mean, finally I would fall asleep from exhaustion, but I was so exhausted for 3 days because I kept seeing those scenes in my mind and I was freaking out. And I tried, you know, breathing meditations. I tried, you know, Kundalini yoga. I tried progressive relaxation. You know, I tried mantras. There were so many things that I tried and did not work. Forget it. You know, so then, you know, years went by and then I saw that they had a sequel. So my husband was like, you got to be kidding me. You're going to do this again. Are you? You know, you didn't sleep for 3 days. And I said, well, you know, I kind of have to see what happened, right, in that scary movie. So I knew I was going to be scared again, but I thought, you know what, I'm just going to plan for it. So if I'm, you know, can't sleep for 3 days, it is what it is, right? So sure enough, you know, it does resolve, but the movie was scary and I'm lying in bed wide awake and seeing scenes in my mind, and my mind is just going. And this is what people are like when they're in a quote-unquote state of, you know, anxiety or hypervigilance, and they just can't help it. Their mind is just going, 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 going. And so I thought, well, none of the other techniques helped in the past, you know, to try to relax, to, you know, try to, you know, breathe these extra. I said, you know what? I'm just going to freaking be scared. You know, I'm just going to be scared. I'm scared. So I'm just going to be scared. You know, I just decided I'm not going to stop trying to be scared. So what I did was I tuned in to see what my body felt like when it was scared. It was almost like a light switch, like from almost pushing away what the body felt like by because I was staying in my mind, seeing the scenes. What I did was I told my mind what to do. So I instructed my mind to look into the body and feel. And so when my mind was busy focusing on my body, I suddenly, it seemed sudden. Okay, I know it sounds funny because obviously I was scared already, but I suddenly noticed that my heartbeat was so big and so fast. It was like, to me, it was like shaking the bed. Like 2 seconds before, I didn't even notice that, right? But now that I've turned my attention, turned my mind to see what does it feel like to be scared, I was like, you know, the pulse was big. There's energy rushing down my arms and legs. My whole body felt like it was like electrified. But here's the thing. Instead of trying to turn that off, I was like, huh, interesting. You know, I was just like, observing. I was like, because I said I was gonna just be scared, right? I just made up my mind, I'm just gonna be scared, you know, forget all this other meditation stuff, right? So I just decided to be scared. Would you know it, after I'm observing my body, I about 10 minutes later I fell asleep and woke up the next morning. I was like, whoa, what happened? And my husband's like, wow, you didn't stay up all night. I said, no. And he said, what did you do? I said, well, actually I wasn't really doing anything. I was just being. I was just allowing those sensations. So for those people who, you know, are in that hypervigilant state, it can seem really scary to the mind to feel what you're feeling in your body. But if you actually accept and feel what you feel in your body without judgment, without saying it's bad, I gotta get rid of it, you know, which resistance causes persistence, then a lot of times those things will start to transform automatically. But it does take some faith, you know, to just go into the body and just to feel it, because it can be highly uncomfortable temporarily. But the mind stills because it's so focused on the body. And that's the trick, is that you're not trying to get rid of the thoughts in your mind or anything like that, because that never works. You actually have to be embodied and feel the energy in your body. And so now we can do it. I can do it, you know, talking to you, CJ. Like, I can feel the energy traveling in my body. There's a sense of calm. And even if I'm excited, I can feel the little spurts of energy going up and down, you know, in my body as I talk to you. So I'm actually doing stillness while I'm talking to you. So we call that stillness on the fly. So people.
That is something I would definitely have to learn.
Well, you know, the parts are probably already doing it, you know, but this time it would just be, you know, tuning that consciousness of, it's sort of like doing two things at once. Which people say, well, it's not good to multitask, but actually it's your attention. So it's our attention into our bodies while we are doing something. So I got to tell you this story, CJ, okay, because this might be helpful for some people. So a very practical example of this is, so my parents call one day and they're upset over something. And in the past, when they were upset, I would try to be defensive or try to help them or whatever, you know, cure them, whatever. So they were upset and they thought I was going to be upset at them for what they were saying. So they just said, just hear us out, you know, so they start talking about, you know, whatever. And in the past, like I said, I would be upset because I would want to try to defend myself to what they were saying or accusing me of or whatever. But this time I thought, no, I'm just going to hear them, going to listen, and I'm going to feel what it feels like in my body as I'm listening. So they're talking in the, you know, when the amplitude of what they're saying, and I'm feeling in my body how that's reflected. And as I'm feeling the energy traveling in my body and focusing on that, I could hear what they're saying. I was focused on what they were saying, but I was feeling the body at the same time. And after all that, they were like, are you upset? And I'm like, no, I'm not. You know, I hear you. You know, and I was able to respond from a place of compassion and peace and not defensiveness. And I thought, wow, this is powerful stuff, you know? So
did you get that right on the first time? Or did it happen over time?
Yeah, luckily these days they don't get mad at me that often. But but in that instance, it was like, you know, I'd been practicing, you know, this stillness on the fly for quite a while. So it just, you know, popped into my head. Huh, why don't you do this while they're talking to you and see what happens? And I was like, oh, okay. You know, so the cool thing is that here's the other cool thing, CJ, is when people practice this stillness, it doesn't have to be my way, but my way is just easy for people that are go, go, go. So if people practice this and feel their bodies, if they have a situation that is difficult, they don't know what to do, it's a problem. What happens is you can bring the problem in to the meditation, if you will, and you can just entertain the problem, but then feel your body. So you can imagine yourself in that problem situation, then feel the body. And what happens in that space is that the mind stops thinking because it's so focused on what's going on in the body. And there's like a space, literally a void. And that's when guidance comes in. Now, whether people, you know, believe that it comes from source or comes from your angels, whatever, your own intuition, doesn't really matter, the label. But what'll happen is that the action that is for the highest good will drop into your consciousness. And then you'll sometimes just take action from that space. Like, and I've done it for multiple things. I've done it for even like making money. I decided one day I was going to, you know, book a trip to someplace. COVID, it didn't work out, but I booked a trip, yeah, you know, to this place I wanted to go to. And I thought, well, would really love the money to actually pay for this trip. But I knew that my passion and excitement about going to the trip was that, yeah, I should do that. Like, I didn't tell myself, no, don't do that. It's not enough money, blah, 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 right? So I did that. I booked the trip. And then I said to the universe, okay, show me the money. You're going to help me. You gave me this inspiration. And this is going to be really fast. Right. And so I just go into stillness. And then I literally like woke up with an idea. I said, oh, I have this program. I haven't really sold it in years. And I don't know, I'll just make it 50% off. You know, like it was just this idea that popped into my head. And I ended up, you know, just putting an email out. It was my birthday. I said, hey, it's my birthday. I want to give you guys, you know, a deal. And so I ended up, you know, paying, like, I think I doubled what I was going to pay for the whole vacation. So that's the really cool thing. That's how we can use stillness in a very positive, influential way.
Okay, that's really interesting. And for the audience, if you're listening right now, take some time to be still during the day. It doesn't have to be complicated. According to Dr. Karen, you can do it 10 or 9% of your wake time, and that should also be enough. Now, Dr. Karen, I'm also very interested in the area of longevity, and I'm constantly finding ways to extend human potential and lifespan. In my quest, I've wandered around some of the world's areas called as blue zones. Have you heard of them?
Blue zones?
Blue zones, yeah. So these are geographical locations such as Okinawa in Japan, Sardinia in Italy, and Icaria in Greece. And all of these places, people are living an abnormal amount of life past the age of 100. So there are sedentarians, super sedentarians, and these are the people who are walking, cycling, driving. And there are so many common factors when you analyze these groups of people. They eat less, they do a lot of fasting, they take time to chill and relax. But perhaps one of the most important things that all of them believe is to have a purpose in life, which experts think gives them the reason to live, and that's why their bodies are helping them live for so long. You also talk about purpose in your work, but you refer to it as your soul's mission. And you have something in the book called the Soul Mission Matrix. Can you briefly elaborate on the soul's mission? Does every soul have a mission, or some people don't and some people do?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting about, you know, these different geographical locations. And so I'm sure we're just at the very, very beginning of researching and understanding this, because, you know, the left brain always wants to understand it logically, you know. But I think there's probably a big energetic component of it that we're not going to be able to measure necessarily with the current instrumentation or even the scientific methods. So I think it's awesome that people are even paying attention to these areas, which is fantastic. And yeah, there's definitely research around purpose. I think that it's very, very true. If people don't, well, everyone, I do believe that everyone has a mission. If people don't feel like they have a purpose, then they're less likely to live as long. Which is why, even though my father has been diagnosed with kidney cancer and very low kidney function from his diabetes and heaven for, you know, all those different medications they give him, which of course cause kidney issues. You know, he has this dream of, you know, archiving and organizing like all the paintings from his father and getting his father's name out there as a famous watercolor artist from China. And, you know, so because he has that purpose, he's outliving a lot of his friends who are dying left, right, and center from various different things, you know, cancers, all that kind of stuff. So even though he has these diagnoses, he's still going because he doesn't feel he's done yet. And I think that's helpful. Now, in the book, The Soul Mission Matrix, chapter 6, I think it is, helps us to extract each of our what I call foundational soul mission. And it's kind of like an overarching theme for our life. So we have a chart in there, and we teach you prior to that in other chapters how to do what I call divine muscle testing and how to be as accurate as possible with yes, no answers. And then you use the matrix to figure out in this timeline, in this lifetime, if you will, what is my core or foundational mission? Some people have a being mission, which is to vibrate a frequency. A lot of sensitive souls have that. Yesterday I was working with one, and her being mission was to radiate love. So she didn't have a doing mission. A doing mission is more action oriented. And some people have both. So in her case, it didn't matter what she chose to do. She could be a teacher, she could be a healer, she could be a traffic cop, you know, it doesn't really matter. As long as she's beaming out the frequency of love, that she would have accomplished her mission. And many, many sensitive souls are here just to anchor in the frequencies of love, joy, peace. Those are the three most common, love, joy, and peace, of the being missions. And in the book, there's more, but these are the most common. And then the doing missions are, there's some action-oriented words like awakening or learning or, in my case, it was protecting. And so that's where I did a lot of work with negative spirits, you know, healing them and supporting and protecting Mother Earth, for example, energetically.
Changing about that.
And then here's the cool thing is that I have been finding, at least with my people that I work with, is once they're awakened to their soul mission and they are really being or doing whatever they're supposed to be doing, then a lot of times their soul mission starts to shift and change because they've accomplished it. And this is maybe not as common because most people don't even know why they're here. But when people know why they're here, they can focus on it. And sometimes their mission will change because they're done, you know, which is really kind of cool.
Yeah, it is surprising. When I was reading about it, I was in a state of like awe and shock at the same time, because I never thought of it, never thought of something like this in the first place. So it's great that you've written about it and people can have access to that in your book at the same time. I also grew up doing Shaolin Kung Fu. I first, when I was growing up, I was kind of obese, and I started practicing Kung Fu just as a way to defend myself against the bullies. And then I practically fell in love with the art. And I would practice it for many, many hours a day. Then I would go to these old video libraries and then rent Chinese cassettes without even having a subtitle. And for anyone who's listening to this and you're Generation Z and you're like, video what? It's a place we used to go out and rent movies before internet and Netflix really became a thing. And two of my favorite movie stars were Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan. Definitely credit a part of my life on and how I've been disciplined to Kung Fu. I've heard you are a fan of a specific kind of Kung Fu called Wing Chun. And again, if people who are listening, they don't know, just go watch a movie called Ip Man. There are like five of them. Tell me why in your live events, your husband tries to attack you with a flying kick. And what is Perception Kung Fu?
Yeah, Perception Kung Fu is one of the chapters in the book. And so in addition to helping people kind of hone their sensing abilities, intuiting abilities, and manifesting abilities, I think it's really important for people to learn how to practically function in everyday life. So I'm not saying that people are going to be, you know, receiving a flying kick, but I kind of liken so what we do in these seminars that we meet in person, it's super fun. People freak out at the beginning, but it's super fun, is we say, look, we usually have a volunteer at one end of the room, and that volunteer represents the pot of gold or where our goals are, where we want to go, you know? And then we're at the other end of the room. And then as I demonstrate, I walk towards my goal, you know? And then what happens is an obstacle comes in our place. And this often happens. And in fact, once you start to want or go for or commit to a new goal, there has to be an obstacle that comes in your way in order to show you a contrast and also for you to grow bigger than the obstacle in order to reach your goal. So the obstacle in this case, we talk about in Perception Kung Fu, is my husband jumps out and, you know, starts doing a flying kick at me. And so we teach the participants, okay, what are our options here? Okay, what, like, people are like, oh, you can block it, or he's like, oh, you can run away, or, you know, and those are options. We talk about that in the book, you know, that if you block, the kick, it's sort of like you pushing against an obstacle. Like, my gosh darn it, I'm gonna get through this, right? With sheer force. And that is an option. I'm not saying it's wrong, it's just, it's an option. But there's some downsides to pushing and forcing. And I've done tons of that in my lifetime, got burned out. That's one of the cons of that. The pros of that is that you get pretty darn tough. Like you do develop a thick skin, if you will. When things come your way, you know, if they're difficult, you're like, aha, another obstacle. Okay, I'm going to get this one too, right? But it gets pretty tiring. So Perception Kung Fu is not that. So then we give the other option where people say, well, you could avoid it. And I'm like, yeah, avoiding, I could jump back, right, and avoid it. But what we notice is that I'm not only no longer closer to my goal, I'm further away from my goal when I do that, when I jump back. So people often will retreat as well. So that is not a viable solution for getting what we say we want by retreating. Perception Kung Fu, on the other hand, is in a physical level, what we do in Wing Chun, which is a specific, you know, skill set that's common to all parts of Wing Chun, is that as the kick is coming to us, we just change our angle. And in fact, we step closer to the opponent, or in this case, the obstacle. So, and if we choose to, we can attack the opponent because now they're facing another direction. They're facing where we were, and now we're facing them. This is sort of like giving a haircut over the phone. You have to kind of imagine this guy. So, and
I'm sure our audience has a good imagination.
Yeah, and I think it's hilarious. So my husband will go at it, right? And people are just like, their eyes are like so big, like, oh my gosh, this flying kick's coming. And all I do is just step one step to the side and turn my body towards him. And then now I can punch, I can do whatever to him. And the kick has completely missed me. So the point in illustrating that is that whenever an obstacle comes in our life, first of all, expect that it's supposed to be there, not a big deal. Okay. The second thing is, like, instead of trying to resist it or run away from it, why not change your perspective of it? And why not say, well, okay, so it's here. So now what? You know, how can this be for my highest and greatest good? How can I use this obstacle to get to where I want to go And so in perception kung fu, and then when we see it visually, when I step to the side and aim towards my husband, I'm actually a lot closer to the goal, to that person on the other end, because I've stepped towards the obstacle, but I've just angled off so it can't hurt me. So people really visually can see, oh, okay. Yeah. And then we have them practice that. And, you know, we get into, you know.
So everyone's playing a flying pig.
Yeah. So because we're trained, right? We know we're not going to hurt somebody. So we go fly kick at them, and they do the thing. And it's challenging because they're like so scared at the beginning. But then they get it and they're like, oh, my God, this is easy. And I'm like, yeah, it is.
I'd love to come to one of your events to see that.
Oh, it'd be so fun.
That was super fun.
We have so much fun. We giggle so much. It's so fun.
Dr. Karen, I truly appreciate the knowledge, the experience, and the healing you've brought to the rest of the world. And thank you so much for sharing your time with us. Now, before you go, I would want you to give one piece of advice, just any one piece of advice, to our listeners for today. Anything that they can take home.
Yeah. The one piece of advice is just to be, because we're trying so hard to have a good life and we see so much chaos going on in the world, and it can really unsettle us. But if you just focus on being, I know many, many teachers said, be in the moment, be present, right? I didn't understand that until I decided to feel my body. Like, what is my body feeling like in this moment? That's how I became present. In that space, all things start to almost like solve themselves. When we radiate that peace within ourselves, then we actually reinforce that peace blueprint, if you will, throughout the world. So it behooves us, for each of us, to be completely 100% responsible for our own minds being the peace. So that is how we help the world.
Thank you so much for sharing that. What is the best way for our audience to find you? Is it through your website?
I have some bonuses that come with the book. So folks can check out. There's $1,000 of bonuses, including energy healing infused videos and MP3s. And when you listen to them, it does energy healing on you, some coaching things. And so from myself and many of my partners, helpers, friends who are wellness leaders. So people can go to sensitivityisyoursuperpower.com. That's the name of the book, sensitivityisyoursuperpower.com, to get get access to those bonuses. And then people can always visit me on my website, karenkan.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us today. Take care.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much, CJ. Thanks everyone for listening.
Your time and presence with us through this podcast is highly appreciated. If you want to learn more, then head over to our website, www.shiftwithcj.com.